Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Aidy Packham, and we know how to whip up the North Stand in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a jubilant evening at the Amex on Saturday as we saw off champions Manchester City, which was a victory that sees us go into the international break in sixth and level in points with both Arsenal and Chelsea. Of course, this was City's fourth defeat in a row, and the mainstream media narrative has been all about their failings rather than our success. Rest assured, that won't happen on this show. It was not such a successful weekend for the girls, though, who lost 5-0 at Arsenal. But they are back on home soil this weekend with West Ham, the visitors to the Amex, as they look to continue their impressive start to the season. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer. Yes, it's Brian Owen. And alongside Brian, we also welcome back the one and only Andy Bass. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever time you're listening to this.
Andy, quick question for you, mate.
Yeah.
How much of Saturday evening can you remember?
A limited amount.
Good. AD. How much of Saturday evening can you remember?
I got home.
I could ask this question of you, Brian, but I know that you were a consummate professional.
Anything I don't remember, it's not because of drinking, it's just because of age, I guess. But I did actually manage to watch the highlights in our local for a very quick half-hour visit with Jonathan Pearce, just along from me, actually, funnily enough, the commentator, although they were playing music, so you couldn't hear it.
Come on! Yeah. We all watched Match of the Day on mega repeat, didn't we?
I did watch Match of the Day on Saturday night. Then I watched it again as if it was a brand new show I hadn't seen before. Absolutely. On Sunday morning. So there we go. It was a wonderful, wonderful weekend, wasn't it? And sometimes we go along to the Amex, and there was comments on the show last week, in fact, wasn't there, about sometimes the atmosphere in there is a little bit flat. It was not flat on Saturday, Brian.
I thought it was the first half, funnily enough. I didn't think it was flat. I thought it was fairly quiet. It was quieter than I thought it would be. And that was because of the game as well. One thing I would say about the atmosphere, by the way, when it is quiet, it's not moaning and getting on at the team. So that's the one thing I would say about the Brighton fans. Even when they are quiet, there's not like loads of moaning and actually see it other places, including like Leeds and Liverpool, where fans get a lot of praise. But the second half was fantastic. Noise was absolutely, it was sort of, it is incessant when it's relentless, and you could just feel the energy. And it just feel, I just thought Brighton looked like they were convinced they were going to win, even though the goals didn't come for a long time.
Mm. Yeah.
Whole thing was building, wasn't it? I mean, it I think that when you start playing Manchester City, I mean, you can go in there and scream your lungs off, but there always is going to be a nervous apprehension. And this is a side that can take anyone apart. You know, historically, certainly over the last 6, 7 years, 8 years, it can take anyone apart just for fun. And it doesn't matter what you could do, high press, low block, sweet Gene Vincent, they'll still take you apart if they feel like it. But, I mean, it's your interesting point there, AD. Yeah, they lost four in a row, and I couldn't help thinking, well, beware the wounded tiger, you know, that's going to sort of come out and get you, because they're still capable of doing so. But I think this, as they said in Ted Lasso, you never talk about runs, you never talk about sequences. I think the four in a row, I think, is neither here nor there. They just weren't good enough.
Well, no, it is that. But I mean, the problem is, and Brian, I know you're familiar with this because you know most of the people that were doing it. But the mainstream media narrative was all about City's failings. And obviously going into it, and that is the story. And that's what sells newspapers, I guess.
Yeah, but also Brighton were winless in three, which I put on our back page. So we were both trying to win the bit of run. The other point was, City lost 4-1 at Sporting, and that was ominous. But what if they'd won 4-1 at Sporting? That would also have been ominous. They're just ominous. But Brighton don't think that way, and we saw that at Anfield. I thought that was ominous. I went to watch, it was just after Halloween, wasn't it? I went to watch some horror film on Halloween. I thought this is a good preparation for Anfield, but it wasn't, because after 2 minutes, you could see it, what Brighton were going to be on top in that game. And this is the same. So professional footballers think a lot different to us. And I think us,
They
we can
do.
always see something being ominous.
Andy,
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel, I mean, possibly it's, I'm asking this possibly because I do a little. Do you feel there's certainly with the comments that are being made from Hertzler in comparison to what De Zerbi might have said, there's a little bit of a sea change in the atmosphere. I mean, Hertzler's come out and said basically on their day they feel that Brighton can beat anyone. And so does that sort of make you go into the next game or even the Man City game thinking, yeah, we could do something here, or are you just as nervous as ever you were when you go into a game against one of the big six?
No, I'm on Team Fab here. I predicted 3-1 before the match, and was disappointed that we didn't actually reach that. But I mean, obviously, it was good. I thought we could win. I thought we could win that game. City had had three pretty disappointing games, and their frailties were really more at the back than at the front end, and we were particularly well set up to exploit the weaknesses that they have right now in terms of they're not great dealing with wide players. I mean, in the first half where they were dominant, they actually kept us kind of like central, which kind of neutralized that. But second half, we managed to make the field a bit bigger, and that worked. But I mean, I've been really impressed with Hertzler's attitude. I mean, his response to the defeat at Anfield was exemplary, and I just get the feeling that every week, his main message to the players is that you can do this. I know it. I need you to believe it. I need you to be more intense. I need you to raise your levels because I believe we can do that. I believe you can do this. You've got to believe it to actually do it, though, as I could say it till I'm blue in the face. But you've got to believe it. And he has been pushing the team along in that way all season.
Yeah, but Brian, hasn't this been the narrative for the last three managers, though? That, I mean, there was a interesting insight from Glenn Murray on the official Albion pod, where he said when he said that they used to go into places like Man City and Old Trafford and Anfield, and there was a fear factor, but they don't go into these games like that anymore. There is we go into them as if like we are level with these teams and we are capable of getting result, and you know what? That's exactly what we've done.
Well, I'll tell you who's credited to a lot from people I speak to as well with changing that mentality, and that is Adam Lallana. He was apparently one who really instilled that sort of thought in other players who, he was used to dealing with other those clubs like Man City, Man United, etc., just as equals, so to speak, not going to a big club. I did an interview with Danny Welbeck last week, which has appeared today, as which is Tuesday, and he was talking there about as well. The ups and the downs. And it was really interesting that we seemed to talk more about disappointments than we did about days when he was happy. And that included drawing at Arsenal. So, again, that is that sort of standard, I suppose, and that almost like that expectation. But if you go back to Anfield, first question when Hertzler came into the press conference was everybody sort of looks around, who's going to ask the first question? Because the first question is like a bland sort of question. And it was a local and bloke, and he said, oh, you must be really proud with the performance and how your team played. And that was when Hertzler did what Andy was saying there. He took it. He could have said yes. It would have been really easy to say, yeah, proud of the team. And that's when he said, no, we've got ambitions. We come here to win these games. So he's probably a little bit more than the others in that, upsetting the establishment, let's say. That's what he calls it.
Well, the thing what you've got is, I think, certainly what Saturday has proved, because, we've been certainly under De Zerbi when we had, and at the end of Potter when we had that rich form when we thrashed Man United, we turned Chelsea over when De Zerbi's first month, we beat Arsenal and we had some really decent results, some really good results. And we thought, well, we can actually sort of, on our day, catch up with these guys. You know full well that if you're taking an average level of this team versus an average level of the players at that team, yes, they're still better, so we have to play better on our day. And I think that probably that one exception was Manchester City. Now, again, admittedly, you could make an argument of, well, they weren't at full pelt, but you can only play, excuse me, what's put in front of you. And I think that argument now has been put to bed. And this is why I'm feeling possibly it's just the fact that, hey, we've beaten Manchester City, but it's actually all about, hey, we have now proved we can beat anyone. And on our day, we need fear. Now, I feared playing Manchester City. That's the kind of this brick wall, this elephant in the room that, you know, that every it's something that everyone has to get over. Every team has to, you know, really raise their game against them. And as I say, can do very little about sometimes. But in this instance, we've now proved we can beat anyone. And I mean anyone. And that is such an exciting position to be. When we beat them before, they'd already won the title. It was a different set of circumstances. It was, you know, a third full house. Everything was kind of different. This was a full-on blood and thunder. Even that brilliant one-all game, they'd already won the title, the one where Enciso scored the screamer. But this was an early season, blood and thunder, you know, not exactly a six-pointer, but sort of, you know, a classic autumn game where there's still plenty riding on it because we're only the quarter of the way through the season. This was a regular season game. We turned up, pitched up, and did a number on them, and that's what makes me feel so buoyed. It's not just the fact that it's a great 3 points. It's not even the fact that, hey, we beat a big six side. We've beaten arguably the best side in the country, maybe in Europe, when they feel like playing. And we did it actually in such a competent, confident way. It was, my point is, it wasn't lucky. We deserve. Yeah,
I mean, the thing that there is it a true stat though that, I mean, out of the so-called big six, we've been the only place where we haven't actually got a single point out of all of them. Then the only place where we've not actually won is actually the Etihad. So, and hopefully we can put that to. I mean, obviously, Man City came into this game with a lot of baggage. Obviously, the three defeats and the spin. Their injury crisis. Hello, we've got an injury crisis as well, by the way. This wasn't peak Man City that beat us 5-0 during lockdown when they absolutely tore us to shreds. But you know, you can only beat what's in front of you, and we did have to ride our luck in the first half, Brian.
Well, I think that's what all of those things that you're saying and what Andy was saying about he thought we'd 3-1, and I thought they would. I actually thought Brighton would win as well going to it. And I think that's why the first half was a bit more underwhelming, because then you start to think, actually, it's not going to happen. You've got all these hopes and it's actually going to be what we've seen before. So I think that was why I actually messaged my work colleagues in the other press box and said, this is a bit underwhelming. And she said, yeah, it is. So I think that's why the first half, it was okay. It wasn't bad the first half, and they were hanging in there, and they had some chances later in the half. So I think that's why I was slightly disappointed with it, and with the it was fairly quiet around there as well. But one man changed the mood, didn't he, basically? Yeah. Well, or the man who sent him out there as well.
In that first half, for all the possession and the efforts they had, they weren't exactly peppering the goal. I mean, they had two or three decent efforts. Yeah, fine, and they missed the sitter from a corner. Where Verbruggen was flapping. But it's not as though it was sort of one way, you know, gung ho charge, you know, in the way it was, say, for instance, against Chelsea, where you think, oh crikey, you know, we're going to be 7-0 down before we even get to nil here. It wasn't like that, because I felt that as much as Match of the Day probably correctly pointed out that we weren't pressing that hard on them, we were still pressing well enough that we had to make them work for their supper.
Yeah, I think later in the half there seemed to be a bit more energy about a press and a bit more proactive. But that's what I'm saying. Even at half time, I thought, and I think I tweeted something, Brighton are working hard. It must be difficult out there, and it's difficult to play your way through as well. So didn't want to be too critical of that, but it was just slightly underwhelming and flatter than I thought it was going to be. But that was only the first half. I don't know.
True.
We've been down that road before. Okay, well, let's talk about City's goal there. And it was a misplaced pass from Yassin Ayari, which was intercepted. And in the blink of an eye, it's 1-0, wasn't it? Haaland still had a lot to do, and it was a sumptuous pass from Kovacic. But, you know, Bart nearly stopped him.
Yeah,
Andy,
I mean...
go on.
Yeah, it was a good goal. I mean, it was a very annoying goal to concede, because quite like a lot of goals that we concede, it's like one minor error, but you know, Ayari didn't really have that many. I mean, he didn't really have that many options he had to make a forward pass, but the odds were not in his favour. There were like two City players in front of him, but there was no real option for him because we put so many people forward in that move. But the fact that he then just gets turned in an instant. I mean, Kovacic was absolutely superb. Pounced on it really quickly. Saw the space in which to pass, and like Haaland had the legs on the two centre halves, and it was a beautifully weighted ball. Verbruggen very unlucky with just where the ball ended up after he'd made the initial save. It just kind of fell kindly for Haaland, but he's got the power and strength to like power through. And it was good, it was a good quad, he needed City to be good in that moment. But it was just unfortunate. I just thought, we've kind of let them have that goal when we kind of worked so hard to prevent them scoring at any other
Yeah,
time.
I mean, it wasn't much, as soon as Haaland got the ball, there wasn't much doubt about what the outcome was going to
No,
be, was there?
no.
But
Well,
I mean,
I don't know.
although
He did
he
well to
he has
nearly
been
stop it.
he has been quite sloppy against us. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's scored plenty, but he's also missed a hell of a lot against us.
Well, he does miss a lot of chances, but then, look at his record. Although that was Saturday's game was the first time that Haaland has scored in where he's lost. Although City don't lose that many games, to be fair, but
Well, there is that. Can I just actually point out when it comes to Haaland, and this is something that we saw, I think, first time round in that one all game, where I think that, one of our players came of age. But who would ever want to get in between a ding dong between Erling Haaland and Jan-Paul van Hekke, unless you have a suicidal tendency? I mean, those two are just psychos against each other.
Especially if you've got Igor coming in from the side as well. I mean, just the pass you mentioned, they did win this game without Lewis Dunk, which didn't used to happen.
Well, absolutely.
That Dunk
I just
happened.
want to make a quick point about Ayari there. I mean, obviously, yeah, it was his misplaced pass, but I mean, one thing, one of the really, really good things about Ayari, and obviously he's got a lot more game time than he would have expected this year, let alone anybody else, is that his first thought is to make a forward pass. So, there is always that chance that it might get intercepted. But, him making the forward pass is what nearly caused where we got that brilliant goal that we never scored at Anfield last week.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
exactly.
mean, the thing is about Ayari's misplaced pass, it was indicative of the entire setup of the first half, in as much as City were playing this ludicrously high line, the one that we tried to do and were undone. But what it did was it compressed the space in our half so much, not helped by the fact that either our forward players were making their runs way too early, so the ball would actually be then played through to someone, in the next echelon, into midfield. Then the forward players are ready to make their runs, and either the defender in question who's got the ball, i.e., Van Hekke, the quarterback, or if Rutter's got the ball in a kind of a midfield area, they won't then make that pass forward because the probability of one of our players being offside. In other words, as much as we tried to play the offside trap as a defensive unit earlier in the season, and I think we have learned our lesson quite a lot since then, what is also evident is that the players up front don't know how to beat that same offside trap or high press or whatever you want to call it, but that same offside trap. So I'm afraid to say that Ayari's pass was indicative of the fact that the space was so squeezed that it would have been, you can say it easier in hindsight, it would have been better chipping it because there was so much space behind in the opposite half that if Adingra and or Mitoma had managed to get on their toes and go down the wing with the ball. But Adingra was always spending so much time in his defensive duties that he was largely anonymous as an attacking force. And I think it was just kind of the setup itself, and as I think we're going to allude to in a second, everything changed. And it wasn't necessarily just the personnel that did it, although that really helped. I think there was a different mindset from everyone about closing down. But I don't know when you're going to get onto him, Adi, because let's face it, we're talking about an absolutely staggering performance against one of the
Yeah,
best
well, we'll
sides
get
in the
on to that in
world.
just a second, but
Okay.
first, I mean, we did have a chance in the first half, and I must admit I didn't pick up on this at the time. But watching the highlights again just now, should we have had a penalty?
Are you talking about where the fellow's on the floor and it hits his arm?
Absolutely.
Well, he moved his arm to the ball.
Absolutely not. He did not.
No, he didn't.
He fell to the ground and the ball hit his arm.
Yeah, simple as that. And, no, he didn't move his arm towards the ball at all.
And as AD well knows, I will shout for pretty much anything. But
you will actually.
You certainly did on Saturday.
I did.
No, I mean, I think that probably in the second half, Pedro had a better shout for a penalty when Walker put his hand on his back when he was about to shoot. Because he shanked that particular shot badly, and you can see why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at the beginning of the second half, there was a chap stood on the jumping up and down on the touchline with no shirt on.
He only had his bra on, didn't he?
Yeah. His entrance to the field was as dramatic as his performance. It was absolutely magnificent. If you're coming in from a beer, I do. It is available on socials of him just his shirt magically just being thrown on him and legging into the middle. It was marvelous.
It was a bit like one of those things where you turn up at a party late and the party's in full swing. You just open the door and then stand at the door, and eventually everyone their eye line turns around to you, and then that's how you get to be center of attention at a party, just by standing at the door. That's what he did. I'm going to stand on the touchline in my bra and then sit right now. Here I go.
But that whole energy of his entrance, it carried on throughout his performance in that half. And there hasn't been anything official that's come out, Brian, but I think he's been carrying a little bit of a knock, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, it has been said by Hertzler in his press conferences, he's had something with his knee. I mean, he was taken off in the one game when he started giving the ball away. I can't remember which game that was. Might have been Wolves, the 2-2. Anyway, but then he didn't play at Liverpool at all, did he? Which was a surprise. He was on the bench but didn't get on. And after that, Hertzler said he'd got something with his knee, some minor sort of thing. And then when I spoke to him about Baleba after the game on Saturday, and I said, is he fully fit? And he said, well, obviously he's not, because if he had been, he'd have been starting. And that was when I said to him then, is he going to go to international duty? And he obviously wasn't going to go there. So, he has had something, but he spoke after to French TV and just said he's sort of looking forward to the rest. And he hasn't been fully fit, but obviously he was okay to play. And he looked all right, didn't he, in those 45 minutes. I mean, I just thought he looked like he thought he was the best player out there.
Well, I think every single pundit I've read. I mean, I read Henry Winter's tweet. You saw obviously the praise he got on Match of the Day. I've been going through social media, especially as you say, Brian, the French speaking world. Mm. I think the narrative is, oh my God, Brighton's recruitment isn't amazing. Wow, we had Bissouma, offloaded him, got Caicedo. Oh my God, you know, and also cheap. And actually thinking, well, actually, he was at Lille already, which are not exactly a backwater club. We did pay 27 million or whatever it might have been for him. So it's just because people hadn't heard of him. And maybe just people haven't heard of players at French football clubs outside of PSG and maybe Marseille. But he was on the radar already, but clearly not those watching the Premier League. And we know that he can be absolutely awesome. It's just that now that it's been seen that he's done it against Manchester City and tore them a new one, now he's on the radar. We're going to have the silly season open in January about where's he going to go, how much is it going to be. We know the club's not going to sell him. They're not going to be interested. Let's hope he doesn't get upset and sort of, you know, have his mind and head turned by some nefarious rascal. I think now that he's done what he's done, we are going to get silly season or open season on him from the ne'er-do-wells on social media.
Yeah, but we had that last season after Evan Ferguson scored a hat-trick, and then Evan obviously had his issues and disappeared for the rest of the season pretty much. But yeah, I mean, I can't see Carlos, unless he gets a major knock, I can't see anything like stopping him. And I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, people can
not
talk.
Not this season,
But you know what? The one that the next cab's already in the rank. He's just out on loan at the moment. And
who do you think's the next one after him then?
Oh, yeah, Corey. He's probably going to be the best one of the lot.
You heard it here, 27th. There you go.
Well, even Yao Cora is already playing in the Champions League. So it's like he played for, he's at Salzburg, isn't he, Brian?
Sturm Graz.
Sturm Graz.
He scored played. Against Salzburg. Was it Salzburg? They beat them 5-0. But the interesting, and I've never really pinned Hertzler down on this, but to what he saw initially and what he's seeing now. Because at the start, in pre-season and start of the season, Baleba wasn't starting the game. Obviously, they've lost Milner to injury. They've lost Billy Gilmore to Italy. But Vifa was going to be the centrepiece of the midfield. So the first game, the first league game was Vifa and Milner with Gilmore coming on as sub. Pre-season, we hardly saw Baleba. He tried him at centre-back in one of the Japanese games. I think it was the first one. Played him at left-back at QPR. And I remember saying to him then, why are you playing him at left-back? Do you just want to get him some minutes or do you see him playing at left-back? And he said some things about, I suppose, I think it might be his athleticism and he'll try to drive forward and all this. But it wasn't like get the midfield built around Baleba in any shape or form. So he has impressed and taken opportunities, if you like, with obviously a midfielder getting in or two getting injured and one being sold. So yeah. But so he has made that progress up through the ranks in quite a short period of time, even for this head coach.
I mean, that's the funny thing, certainly since De Zerbi arrived and possibly, well, and certainly since then, is just how relatively fluid our midfield had to be. I mean, we even in the recent history, marvel at McAllister and Caicedo playing alongside each other, and therefore not a surprise that we finished sixth. Brilliant. But like as Brian said, the number of names he's just mentioned, and that's just from this season. So even, I think, probably most people's first choice at the moment, even though the second person has only played for about 12 seconds, is Baleba and O'Reilly. Because, I mean, the game started, obviously, with Ayari and Hinshelwood. So even then, I mean, I know that one came off tactically, one came off injured. But even then, there is still, we don't have a settled central midfield pairing. I think that most people would love to see Baleba starting. But after that, do they want O'Reilly? Do they want I mean, obviously, it's, at the end of the day, who we want is irrelevant. Who is the second person? If indeed Baleba is actually going to be one of the first names on the team sheet.
It is going to be such a major headache for Fabian, isn't it, Brian? I mean, basically, when everybody is fit, I mean, out of, obviously, we spent a lot of money in this window, as it has been well documented. But I mean, I don't think we can get all of those players into the same team at the same time.
No, I mean, obviously you're talking about changing half the outfield team during a match as well. So, but there's all sorts of options like going forward. Now you've got João Pedro coming into the contention. Gruder's done his bits and pieces. And he's a router. There's a lot up front. Lewis Dunk coming back with Van Hecker and Eagle playing well. Ferdy seems to have various options. The one when I'm trying to guess the team is the funny one in a way is Jack Hinshelwood, because you look in individual positions and you think he's maybe not the best in that midfield position. He's maybe not the best in that fullback. So when you're picking the 11 best players, it's sometimes hard to get him in. But when you're picking a team and a collective unit, you want him in. So he's quite, he's maybe not in the first 11 individuals, but you do possibly want him in that team lineup. And obviously, O'Reilly, we still haven't seen him start. So, but we know that players can fall by the wayside. And that was another thing when I spoke to Danny Welbeck for today, and he spoke about Europe. And I said, how would you be better prepared? Because he said they would be. And one thing he said was the club probably realised now that the squad was a bit thin last season. So we might not be sitting here for too long thinking so many options. We might be thinking, oh, where are they going to get they're a bit short or something. So they will all get their opportunities. And this is such a busy month coming up as well.
Yeah. I mean, one seeks to presume here, and it is obviously it's a hypothetical now, is that if we had been in Europe this season, then the first 11 that any given person, any given fan, because we all like to do this, would pick, and then you pick your second 11 because, and let's face it, your Premier League is always going to be a priority, so you're going to pick, let's say, nominally your European 11. If you're going to have the kind of the second person in any given lineup, you're still going to see that 11 and think, That's not too shabby, Andy.
No. You know, I mean, we kind of had like the second choice midfield up again, starting at Anfield last week, and they dominated. You know, in the same way they didn't dominate the first half of this particular match. Mm. But yeah, I mean, we've at that bench, I looked at the bench on Saturday and I thought, well, you know, that could start, you know, if there were 11 of them. But you could almost start that group. They're all good enough to start. And that's where we're at now. That's where, you know, we have accumulated players. Their participation has been disrupted by injury and you know, other annoying things getting in the way, international breaks and all this sort of stuff. But by hook or by crook, you know, people are getting minutes. This is now like a much broader squad in terms of experience than I would say last season's was when we were going into Europe. I think the injuries absolutely crippled us. I think injuries would hurt us this season, but I don't think they would hurt us as much as last year. We're sixth in the table and we've had like the best part of like 5 or 6 weeks without Pedro, without Dunk. Hinchinwood's been in and out. I mean, I would say, you know, Belaba's been out. I mean, our best players have been out and the stand-ins have been playing top five, top 10 football.
Do you notice that on any given day, any given home match, certainly, I mean, I'm not so sure about the away matches, but when you see the team lineups, if you notice the subs bench this season has got far fewer kids in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
it has got kids in it, but they're just really good ones.
Yeah, they're all kids.
They're kids.
But also, just with Hertzler, it's so important getting the substitutions right and getting the timings right. And I thought maybe at Liverpool it was left a bit late. And I do wonder whether it's harder to make a substitution when things are going quite well than it is when you're behind and you've got sort of less to lose. So key for him as well, I guess, getting those substitutions right, which generally I think we've probably seen.
Yeah. Okay. When you're Brian, when you're picking your best 11, do you still do it as a 4-4-2?
No, I do it. I do it as a vaguely a 4-2-3-1, but essentially the way we. I mean, you were talking there about all the midfielders, but I've just been watching some analysis on the Premier League website that Belaba was midfield. Literally, he was the midfield in the second half. And then it had so many, like O'Reilly was more like an inside right. Joao Pedro was more like an inside left. It was almost like a five going forward. And no, I mean, formations do change all the time, don't they? I don't even know if managers think in the way of formations in the way that, you know, that we used to. But it is a very different game. But no, I go 4-2-3-1 vaguely. Is that? But when I watched at Newcastle, though, they were 4-2-4. You know, I saw it in front of me and they had like, Ayari was wide left, Jorginho wide right, Ferguson and Welbeck were both playing. They were literally three lines, 4-2-4, and that was out of position.
Yeah. God, it's a beauty. It would be fun now, wouldn't it?
When O'Reilly was interviewed after the game, on Saturday, he was talking about what did the boss ask of you, and then he went on this. Well, he might as well have gone and said some kind of formula that they've worked out at NASA. And he was talking about we were doing the double pivot eight, and then sort of like we decided not to go for the six, so we go for the 10 diagonal, and then you throw them up in the air, see how they land, and you're thinking he's actually given us a sort of brief insight from inside the dressing room, and the rest of us are going, what?
Yeah,
it was.
To
I mean,
be honest,
clearly
Guardiola was going, what?
What?
Was okay. Wearing that second.
Yeah. No, it was, yes, everything in the second half clearly stemmed from Belaba's much more energetic and positive, as they say, on the front for forward thinking. And that makes it, I can't help thinking, the cynic within me makes it sound like an inherent criticism of Ayari, but I don't think it is. I think it's more of an inherent criticism of the entire setup of the first half, i.e. standing off them 5 yards rather than, you know, sort of getting at them. But Belabor is actually clearly so much quicker. He's got that extra half yard. I mean, there were a couple of times. I mean, it didn't help that Ayari was on a yellow card. By the way, pauses for brief mini rant. Andy, Adi, Brian, just tell me, what did Man City have to do, way and above what we did, in order to get a yellow card?
Yeah, the shirt pulling in particular seemed inconsistent.
There was a clatter in the first 5 minutes, wasn't there? Whoever
yeah,
did that.
True, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure you want to ask me that question now.
Get the radio station shut down.
Okay, well, we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Al, it's Christmas coming up. Where can you get some nice Christmas wreaths or Christmas trees? Where can you go?
You can get all sorts of wonderful Christmas decorations at Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Yes, as you say, it's that time of the year when our thoughts turn to buying things that, frankly, we wouldn't normally. And it is still better than going to the local park or local cemetery and upsetting anyone. So do head to Flowers Unlimited for all your floral details. But also, like I say, they do make and sell Christmas wreaths for anyone who wants that on their front door. They do sell Christmas trees, proper ones, not this plastic stuff that rots the planet. So do head down there. We will be having competitions between now and not very long to see if you could actually win a couple of bits and pieces from them. But for the time being, until then, and don't forget, by the way, if you're an Albion season ticket holder, when you do get to buy anything off there, you do automatically get 20% off their listed price, which is not to be sneezed at, as opposed to the rest of their flowers.
Okay, well, back to the MX on Saturday then. And, I mean, Andy, it was a game of two halves. Obviously, we've spoken about how the Labour's changed that game. And obviously, goals change matches. Now, well, there's something that you pointed out a few weeks ago about a change in the style of play and about how everything seems to be a lot quicker and more direct through the middle.
Well, there just seems to be a thing about the second half that we just up the intensity. Like these second halves where we come back, you can just see that, you know, we never really played badly in first halves. We just kind of play slightly within ourselves. And I think that irritates Hertzler a lot because he just seems to say the same thing to them every week. I just need you to be more intense, win your personal duels. And basically, that's what we did. Obviously, with Belabor coming back on, he's much more dominant in breaking up play and in possession. And he's always looking forward. He pushes the game up. It's not even so much like a high line. It's just that the ball just spends more time in the opponent's half because we're getting after that second ball every time. And we keep that press on. There's very little space for the opponent in possession to get that clear ball out to make the attack. And it is the extra intensity. I think it probably is going to be quite hard to do that for a full 90 minutes unless you literally change the 11 at half time. And that might explain why we've yet to see a full game of that, because I think if we did that for a full game, we'd absolutely batter an opponent. But you know, the change, as soon as Belabor came on, you could feel it in the crowd. And like as I think Al said earlier, he said it was building and building and building. And that's exactly what it was. And City didn't really know what hit them. They couldn't do a lot about it.
Yeah, it was interesting because there was, the question I was asking was because we're seeing the midfielders trying to punch the ball through the middle. And obviously we've got Carew giving us width, and we're using that, and we're actually mixing it up and using a long ball quite often now. But there is, we keep on trying to find that through ball, and you could see that particularly with the winner, where Belabor plays it off to Welbeck, who lays off to Pedro, and it just slide ball pass. It was just quick.
I'll tell you what that goal reminded me of. It was the winner against Marseille, not because of of anything else other than the build up. It was kind of a vertical build up. They went straightforward with the passes. There was the odd diagonal bit here and there, but it's even just Pedro skipping past his man in order to create the space for the pass through to O'Reilly. It was very redolent of that. And you think, well, okay, but things they've done it under different managers. So not only has most of this squad taken in a lot of what RDZ had taught them, Hertzler's job would have been that much difficult when he came in if we hadn't had that, you know, sort of near 2 years with De Zerbi first. I think that there's an element of slightly playing within themselves. There is a lot less kamikaze, although admittedly I wasn't at the Chelsea game, but it's a lot less kamikaze. And certainly has been since that game. But yes, there's a lot of that. But it does require confidence and not overconfidence. It helped that, for instance, Belieber, who we can be guilty of actually, you know, picking up the ball, running past the man, running past the second, and then you realise that the pass out wide or something like that is the right option, and he tries to take on a third man. So it's always for him about the decision-making at a given time. But that's not just even about him. It's about all of them at any given moment. And if sometimes I'm going to criticise, you know, I think that we still haven't seen the best out of Mitoma yet. He's played very well. But as much as his decent approach play, I still don't think that his final ball is as good as it could or should be. It can be a little bit slack and a bit sloppy. I think the wide thing I'm trying to say here is that we have such a depth of talent within the squad, within the individual players and within the team and within the management system itself, that we still are nowhere near as good as we could be. And yet here we are in sixth place, riding high, taking on the champions and giving them a punch on the nose.
Andy?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that last comment. I'd say we're about 65-70% of what we can be. I still think we're figuring it out. I still think there are details that need cleaning up because, you know, there is the occasional bit of sloppiness.
Yeah.
The Chelsea game was a prime example. It wasn't the system. It was just lack of control and poor decision-making more than anything else. It was not a structural issue. It was just like an individual error type thing. And we're still working on that. Obviously, there's been very little continuity with the first 11 because of injuries, because of you know, the different times at which the new players came in during the off season and the amount of time they've been working together and all this sort of stuff. So we could be absolutely frightening by the end of this season if we can just keep everybody fit, get a bit of continuity, and Hertzler still works on that belief. And, you know, and just for once, I think the international breaks come at a pretty good time for us, because I think a couple of our key players are going to get a couple of weeks off.
Sure. Yeah. But also, it's go on, Brian.
No, it's just another fact. You used to talk about playing through the middle, which is that option. But another factor, which I think is getting better and better, is that old link up down the left, Estupiñán and Mitoma. They seem to be coming back to what they were. And there seems to be this pattern as well, that the games they seem to start slowly develop into the best ones. So there's been a few like that, away to Everton, well away, especially Arsenal away, Newcastle away, this one against Man City, obviously 2-0 down against Tottenham. And then when you think when they've started well, like at Chelsea, and it's all sort of gone wrong. So I don't know why that is, if it's just coincidence. But no, I agree, there's plenty more to come, and the league is so tight.
To add to that, the Wolves game at home. It was 87 minutes of really good and then 6 minutes.
Well, it wasn't really good, was it? But it was just when they got the 2-0, there was such relief, and it was Ferguson. And I think it was a double. But anyway, let's not dwell on touring with Wolves.
Because
I'm
still really annoyed about it. Because those 2 points now would make the table look a whole lot better.
Well, and Ipswich as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's three home games where you can clearly see that we've left 6 points out of those. So it's Ipswich at home, Forest at home, Wolves at home.
Yeah.
Where those games were there for the taking. But conversely, I think that the point that we got at Arsenal was still a point gained, irrespective of the whole 10-man thing. We got a last-minute winner against Manchester United. in the same way that Wolves got their last minute equaliser against us. So that, you know, losing and gaining 2 points and what have you. Liverpool, you know, could we, should we, who knows? I mean, these things, the old cliche, they do even themselves out. So for every time we get annoyed at sort of the quote lesser teams, there's the other games where we think, well, actually, against the top teams, you know, were they wins that could have been draws? Were they draws that could have been defeats? So, yeah.
But also on Saturday, when we're in this period of the game we're now talking about, City just seemed to be wilting.
Yes.
And I did wonder if that was anything to do with their previous results and their previous schedule, whereas Brighton have had, and Brighton probably had a real sort of motivation after that Liverpool game.
Yep.
To, and again, that's why I was slightly disappointed with the first half, because I thought after that, they're going to be, they're going to have that feeling that we can be better than this. So I definitely felt one team growing stronger and one team wilting there in front of our eyes in the second half.
Yeah. I think we just had more hunger, really, for it, because it was like, I mean, the City's injury situation, it's been well documented, and it's been done to death elsewhere. They've got that. They've also got the whole 115 charges thing still hanging over them. Well, I mean, it's going to the results of that are going to be coming out in January, I believe, and there's going to be, there's going to be some sort of sanction, I'm sure. So it's a weird season for them at the moment.
I mean, just in the case of this game, I mean, it's just Man City were better. You could argue, well, if we'd have got 2 or 3 yards closer, but then again, they still have it within them to, you know, you could actually basically swap shorts during the game and they'll still beat you. I mean, off the ball in the first half, I thought that we sort of like largely contained them. I mean, they got through us about 2 or 3 times, but they largely contained us. But it's just that when we got the ball, it's like a group of 11 individuals. We lost the ball far too easily. And it's not as though Man City were really coming hammer and tongs at us. There was just too many, as I think Andy put it just now, too many individual errors. I mean, one of which was the Iari one, which got intercepted for the goal. That's not to say blame Iari for it. I'm not. You know, you score as a team, you concede as a team. But it was kind of indicative of the fact that actually there were better ways. Like I say, he could have lofted that pass. He could have done an, you know, it's easy to be wise after the event. But when you see it and you think, oh, come on, look, you know how to pass to each other. Be a bit more sort of, you know, imaginative and a bit more careful.
Yeah. Andy?
Yeah, I just think going back to Andy's point about, you know, we were just a bit more hungry. I don't think anything exemplified that more than the actual first goal. Really good ball by, was it Van Hekker out to Mittema?
Yeah, he had a couple of those raking passes, didn't he?
Yeah, all fantastic. Backing, yeah. And then Mittema, you know, gets it in the mixer.
I've got it written down as corridor of uncertainty, Andy.
Corridor of uncertainty, get it in the mixer, whatever cliche you want to use. But we had three players around that ball. When it went into that central area, and they just kept having a go at it. The City couldn't get it clear, and then actually Pedro gets a remarkably clean strike on it. It was beautiful, he made sure it went in. There's going to be no doubt about that.
If that was a goal that we conceded, I'd have said that was Keystone Kops defending, because let's face it, there seemed to be a big bundle of about 6 Man City players.
They all got in each other's way.
Yeah, and then just bloop, out comes the ball, and Pedro says, "Oh, there it is. I'm having that." But apart from that, they all just sort of like collapsed on each other. It was, like I say, I mean, I thought that in that sense, it was slightly with Dean defending from City's point of view. But you know, how much do I care?
We beat them there as well.
He was bouncing around for so long that Mittema, having played the cross, was also trying to put it into the net.
It's great.
Yeah, your turn. No, you do it. No, you do it. No. Oh, no. Oh, okay, give it to the Brazilian fella. He'll whack it home.
Okay. Moving on from that, I mean, we mentioned the 115 charges over Manchester City, which is something which is probably more akin to a show about football finance. And funnily enough, there is one coming up this Friday at Brighton's Unitarian Church. There are a few tickets left. Kieran Maguire was obviously on the show last week telling us all about that. It's a show all in the aid of the Brighton Samaritans. So if you can get along there, it's going to be very good. There's the last few tickets are available. Let's make that show a sellout for Kieran because he deserves it.
Absolutely. Just head to Eventbrite and type in the name Prize of Football Brighton, and it's the Unitarian Church in New Road. So that's on the for those who don't know, it's on the same street as the Theatre Royal and Pinocchio's. It's that lovely sort of tiled street, just to the west of the Pavilion Gardens. So
opposite what used to be the smallest pub in Brighton, but it's not anymore.
Which one was the smallest pub in Brighton?
Well, it used to be Misfits.
That's never been but tiny.
It used to be before they extended it.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, it's still the hole in the wall now, I'm pretty certain. Anyway. So, Kieran was on last week with Dean Gallagher from Brighton Samaritans, a massive Brighton fans. Also on the show last week was our good friend Dan Tester, who has a book out, Brighton and Hove Albion, on this day, brackets third edition. And he has a book to give away. Now, we had a competition for that book, and we asked the question on the 9th of November 1996. Brighton and Hove Albion played Mansfield Town at the Goldstone on a game that was officially boycotted by Brighton fans, although some fans did get through. But as soon as it was quite a famous attendance, we asked what that attendance was. I know you know the answer, AD. Andy O'Brien, do you know the answer to this?
No, I don't know. No. I've just been watching a video about it today, actually, but I don't know. So I remember the North Stand looking very sparsely populated.
Yeah, I could tell you that the official attendance that day was 1,933. If you lop that one off, then maybe you might get closer to it. I think I did. I was actually picketing, for want of a better term, the North Stand that day, and I think 88 people went into the North Stand. But as was traditional on at that time, someone, no idea who, someone opened up the exit gates in the southeast corner at half time, which meant quite a lot of people came in, and we managed to scrape a one all draw that day. So yes, the attendance was 1,933, and the winner who gave us the correct answer from many, many correct answers we received is Sarah Peck. Sarah, many congratulations. We'll be getting your details later so Dan can send you the book. Meanwhile, if you want to go to any of the book launches on the 27th of November, Dan is hosting one at the Caxton Arms in Brighton. That's Brett Mendoza's pub. And then at the Broadwater in Worthing the following night. The book's available from Dan or from Amazon, price £13.99, and thoroughly recommended because I worked on it.
Yeah. The ones that aren't signed are more valuable.
They're worth a fortune. They're going to be mint copy. Right. Andy, so let's talk about the winning goal and limbs. Or should we just talk limbs?
Extraordinary. Utterly extraordinary. The atmosphere in the second half had just been amazing. I don't think we've really mentioned that too much, but it was interesting. I really liked it. It was like Tony Blim's Blue Army that really took off. Which is a great let's keep the noise going. It's something easy for people to join in, and that's like, and then Pedro's goal. Obviously, everyone's going mad. I mean, everyone's just still buzzing from that. The Albion chants are going. You could just feel the energy in the crowd, and then when you know, basically like three dreamy passes, Belabor, Pedro, Welbeck. Welbeck to Pedro, the ball from Belabor to Welbeck, because he knew he was going to like do the knock back to Pedro, and then Pedro's then going to take it forward. It's just beautifully clinical. O'Reilly knows what's going on way before the defenders do. He goes in there, absolutely one touch, boom, it's in.
Yeah.
It's just like no hesitation.
Calmest man in the stadium.
Yeah, he'd been on just a matter of minutes, but when you listen to his interviews, you can see that he studied how the team's been playing. So yeah, he kind of knew what was going to happen. He was in there clinical. And then the place just went mental. A lot of hugging going on. And
Carew very much enjoyed it.
Yes, it was fabulous to see him on.
What did he do? I missed what he did.
He managed quite the leap of celebration.
for somebody who doesn't smile very much, he was properly beaming.
Yeah. But I mean, the whole place just went mental. It was, and it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, you live for these moments. They
Yeah.
just, they're
Well,
just, they're just the best.
what I loved was the fact that I really wasn't 100% certain how to celebrate, so he just went off and did some stuff. But and I know we'll talk about the goal a little bit more, but it was just at the end. Obviously there was 9 minutes of injury time, and doing that whole thing towards the North Stand, and they go, ooh, and of course, they then wave their arms, you get this hooray, hooray, and he didn't
It
do
is
it. And I think it was
it
someone
is
else had to,
the
yeah, and someone had to show him how to do it. I
Yeah,
mean,
Russo went, didn't he?
yeah.
Yeah, I did allude to this in the intro, Al.
Yeah, just
But I mean, O'Reilly's been very impressive, actually. I mean, I know Andy, you were very impressed with the interview on the official Seagulls pod today, weren't you?
yeah, very much so. He's just really intelligent. And it's just the sort of player you want to have in the dressing room. I think it's certainly a dream player for a manager. That's like, I'm talking, this is a guy who's going to understand what I'm saying. But I just found it fascinating about how he used his time as an injured player to like basically observe and still learn whilst he was unable to sort of physically get involved.
Yeah. Have you had much dealings with him yet, Brian?
No, I haven't, because I was interviewing elsewhere when he did quite a lot of media, but I was forwarded the quote, so we did a back page with him last week, and he said that he thought he was going to be involved against Man City, and he was around. I went to a foundation thing, Albion Foundation thing the other day, and he was around talking to people, and he's quite, yeah, like you say, a lot of depth to him, a little, it's almost quite intense as well. But yeah, to come on, and you sort of forget he's played for Celtic and he's played like in big games, but it was his Premier League debut. You sort of forget that thing, and there is a jump from the Premier League, from the Scottish Premier League or Scottish League to the Premier League. I mean, I've done a freeze frame of the goal here as the ball is played into Belaba, and we were talking about formations a little while ago, and Brighton are literally set up in one of those old fashioned 1950s W's with sort of two at the back, then three, and then a line of five across the front. You've literally got there, yeah, Mitoma, João Pedro, Welbeck, O'Reilly, and then Gruda, and City with not enough defenders. So it just looks like an old team lineup from a 1953 match programme.
You've missed out Charlie Charles.
No, it's the W anyway. So yeah, no.
Yes, which is an appropriate letter for the game on Saturday.
Yes,
Oh, yeah.
we
It is. Well,
We
that was a
got the
slow burner,
dub,
wasn't it?
as they say in the United States.
Yeah, actually, one other thing that you sort of alluded to there, the 9 minutes, that was another a moment when just as Brighton had three chances in a row and getting real momentum, the crowd were really getting into it. And then the linesman's earpiece packed up. And even then, I thought, is that going to work in City's favour? That timeout. And then they had a team talk and they made a substitution. And even that, I thought, worked against Brighton in a way. Well, it didn't, but it potentially could have done. Because it was, if Pep Guardiola could have called a timeout in the way that NBA coaches do half-time interviews, as we also saw, he would have called a timeout at that moment when the earpiece stopped working.
It
And
wouldn't be
it
like,
he actually
it'd be
brought
very
on De
unlike
Bruyne.
Pep to instruct his players to do, tactical fouling and
No,
stopping the game and momentum. No, that would never happen.
I don't think they pulled the plug, but it was just one of those things. I thought, well, that's not very timely for Brighton.
Well, it is very timely for us because that is all we have time for this week. So thank you so much to Alan Wes. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you, as always, to Brian Owen. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on smart speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
I used to know everything about you. Today, when I tried to point you out to one of my friends, I think the wrong girl again. Don't see you in the crowd anymore. I think it's you, but I can't be sure. You're wearing disguises. Occasionally, it goes so fast.
shoes were too big.